We're going? Mm-hmm. Well, September, my memory of September 11, 2001, and I think we always have to be careful to separate our memories from what the pictures we've seen or what we saw on TV or what's written in books and magazines since then. So I'll try to just stay with what my experiences were. I remember I'm in the investment business, and I go to the office around 8 o'clock, which is 9 o'clock New York time. I remember pulling in to my parking lot a few minutes before 8 and hearing on the radio that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. And it wasn't a time where we thought about terrorist events in the United States. There had been one in Oklahoma, but that was not the type terrorist event that we often heard about in Europe. So terrorist event at that time with the first radio announcement was not something I was thinking about. I was thinking about a small plane in a busy city with multiple airports hitting the tallest building in the city. All the other buildings around it were, you know, quite a bit shorter. So I could see where a small plane got confused or there was fog or something. So I really didn't think anything about it and walked into my office. I work with four other people. We have pretty much a TV in each office because we're watching business news. So it's not uncommon for us to have CNBC or Fox or CNN on. So I started my day, turned my computer on, and we weren't even among the five of us in the office even talking about the plane hitting a building. We're all trying to digest news first thing in the morning, and that just didn't seem like that big a deal. That was a odd thing that happened in New York, and it could have happened anywhere. But all of a sudden, and I don't know the exact timeline, but obviously it's well documented, but it wasn't that much longer that a second plane hit the second tower. And at that moment, everyone in our office, everyone on TV knew that this was an orchestrated event. There was no way it was two mistakes within 30 minutes. But until that time, there wasn't even, as I remember, much discussion of how big the plane was, the first plane. So, you know, until the second plane hit, I think probably in our minds, we were all thinking it was a very small plane, probably one pilot or, you know, two or three people in a small prop plane or something. But the very second that the second plane hit, just everything changed. We all jumped in front of our TVs. We started searching the different news channels. We were trying to get any news we could. And all of a sudden, the videos started showing up from different angles. And it was clear that there was a big, big problem. And, you know, it didn't take long for everyone to start referring to it as a terrorist event. Early on, after the initial fire, you know, on TV, we see the fireball come out of the building. But as I remember it, you know, just a few minutes later, you saw a lot of smoke coming out of the building. You didn't see a lot of fire coming out of the building. And it seemed to be isolated to just one or two floors. So it seemed like the situation could be brought under control. You're thinking about sprinkler systems and other fire retardants or any kind of emergency procedures or anything that would put out a fire. So still, you weren't thinking about this as a real catastrophe. My wife's cousin was a general in the United States, and I had emailed him from time to time about various things. I immediately emailed him and said, what just happened? And he replied, OBL, for Osama bin Laden. And so this was a retired general who immediately knew the most probable suspect. And just as a little history, during the 1980s, 12 to 15 years before, under the Ronald Reagan administration, there were some Senate hearings over some things that some of the Reagan administration people had done, exchanging arms for military information. And there were some Senate hearings, and a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North was testifying in a Senate hearing, and this was in 1987 or 88, and the senator quizzing him started asking him about some expenses that Oliver North had paid to build a fence and a security system around his house. And I'll never forget that he said, well, there are people in the world that really want to get me. And the senator said, who could possibly pose that kind of a threat to me, to you, an army colonel with a house in a suburban neighborhood in the United States? And even at that time in 1987 or 88, he said, there's a guy named Osama bin Laden who is a very bad person. And no one ever talked about him again for the next 15 years or so until 9/11. But it was such an odd name that I think it kind of stuck with people. We all kind of had it in the back of our mind. So when my wife's cousin, the retired general, said OBL, and we knew enough to know that was Osama bin Laden, you knew immediately that the military was aware of the potential threat around the world, not necessarily in New York, not necessarily in the United States, but they knew who was controlling the bad actions around the world. So anyway, back to the morning, we watched both buildings burn for quite a while, and things occur to you like, why isn't there a helicopter on top of the building rescuing people? But you forget how hot it would have been. You couldn't have brought a helicopter in. He would have had no control. The air, the thermal pressure coming up, or the windows, or probably the structure of the building, whether they could even get to the rooftop. But you're thinking stairwells when there was an attempt to blow up the World Trade Center in the early 1990s. Someone had a car bomb and they blew it up in the parking deck underneath the World Trade Centers. Everyone just came down the stairwells and came out, and there was a lot of smoke and soot, but everyone was fine just coming down the stairwells. So again, we kind of just, I think, tended to think most people, other than those on the floor where the planes hit, that most people would get out of the building, even those on the floors above, and that it would be a long, hard day, but eventually the fire would be brought under control by the fire department, and everyone but the people on those floors would probably end up living. And then, you know, it just, the tension ratcheted up throughout the morning. There were fewer people talking. The reporters weren't talking about all the people that would be saved and how limited the damage would be. And I knew that the buildings had something like 40,000 occupants a day in them. I'm not sure if that was for one building or both buildings, but I knew there were tens of thousands of people that could be working in those buildings. So the numbers could be very high when this was all over with. But it really got serious when they gave a news report with a camera and a reporter pretty close to the buildings. I don't know how the reporter got that close. But all of a sudden, on this live feed with this reporter, you heard some explosions in the background. And then all of a sudden, the reporter almost started crying, and they said, those are bodies hitting the ground, that you could hear them hitting the roof of the walkway or whatever, that people were jumping out of the buildings. And so the gravity of the situation throughout the morning just became more and more evident that this was a life-changing event for all of us. And then when the first tower fell, my first thought was that this was so well planned out and so well orchestrated that not only had they planned to fly the planes into the buildings, but they knew with all the rescue workers and all the people in the building that they had planted explosives up and down the building like we see old buildings that are demolished, and that there had been explosives put in the building from top to bottom, and that they detonated those explosives to bring the whole building down. So that was my perception of the first building that collapsed. In actuality, the steel structure just became so weak that that one floor collapsed, and then like a hammer hitting a nail, as each floor collapsed, it put more pressure on the floors below it. So there was physically a natural phenomenon of the buildings collapsing. Once two or three floors started caving in on each other, it just kind of pounded the building into the ground. At that point, I think we were all just numb, and we knew that probably the second building would come down, and this would start a war. This would change the financial markets. This would change the way we behaved in public. This was going to be a life-changing event for all of us. you know, about that time I had thoughts, you know, are we in danger? I never really thought about our little building. I was in a three-story building and didn't think much. But I did think about, called my wife, and she was home with Anna, our daughter, who was 2 years old. And she was crying. She had been watching, and she had reported. I mean, she told me that she heard a reporter say that they found some documents on the streets from a company that my wife had dealt with over the phone for many years. So she knew that probably some people that she knew or had certainly talked to over the years had been killed severely impacted that company at that time. But also we thought, you know, where we knew that there was an attack on the Pentagon, and we knew there was another plane crash in Pennsylvania. We knew that all air traffic had been stopped. We knew the president was in the air going to his secret place, which turned out to be Shreveport, Louisiana, not far from us. But you never knew, you know, in hindsight, we think it was four events. It was their resources were limited. They couldn't have carried out hundreds of attacks. At the time, you don't know what their resources were, how many people were involved. There may have been 1,000 people involved that had $1 billion worth of financing. We simply didn't know that day. I was worried about my son in elementary school. Would they start bombing schools? You know, were there terrorists in Little Rock? You know, were we going to see terrorist events in every city in the United States? You just simply didn't know. Those are things we forget about in hindsight because we start piecing things together as time went on. But anyway, that probably not a whole lot more to add to that day. After the towers went down, and there was more and more speculation on TV that it was a Middle Eastern terrorist attack. I probably can't add much more to my perspective from Little Rock as far as that day went, but something I hope I never forget, but I do tend to forget temporarily, is how it changed us for the weeks and months to come, and maybe still, that I remember sitting in a football game just a few weeks later in a pretty big stadium, a stadium with 50,000 people in it, and seeing a jet airplane on the horizon coming out of our local airport. And I just watched that jet, wondering whether it would bank its wings and start headed towards the football stadium. Just driving to work in the morning or around town and watch a jet take off from the airport, you would watch it for a minute and wonder if it was just going to explode right in front of your eyes, that there might be a bomb on it or someone might shoot it with a surface-to-air missile. I remember even sitting in one of my coworkers' offices with a guy from down the hall, and we were thinking, well, what's next? What will be the next thing that happens? And we were talking about that oftentimes terrorists aren't trying to kill tens of thousands of people, but they're trying to scare all of us. And so one thing we thought was, sure, New York's a target. It's the biggest, it's the biggest city in the United States and one of the largest cities in the world. It's the financial capital of the world. It's a very, very important city. So certainly that would be a target for a terrorist. But we were thinking, if you want to scare everyone in the United States, why don't you pick out a small town as a target? So I just, in my mind, I picked out a small town that I could think of near the town I grew up. I just thought of Texarkana, Texas. And they have a little shopping mall. And I was thinking, well, what if a terrorist drove a truck full of explosives into a mall in Texarkana, Texas, and detonated the truck and blew up part of a mall and killed a few hundred people? Well, something like that would scare Americans in every town in the United States. Just playing out those scenarios that you just didn't know where all this was going to lead. I think it's just fascinating that no terrorist events happened for years in the United States after that. But that day or that week or that month, we just didn't know how far this was going to go. And to this day, this was, you know, I remember, you know, people that say they know what they were doing or where they were when John F. Kennedy was assassinated or when the space shuttle Challenger blew up or when Elvis died or something like that. Clearly, this is an event that is one of those for me that I can just picture that day. So anyway, questions?
How did you feel when I decided to go to school in New York?
Well, that's a good question. New York had a lot of crime problems throughout much of my life. And after I started my career and went to New York in the late 80s and the early 90s, there was a real concern for just street crime. And I remember an attitude, my longest trip there was for about 8 or 9 days in a training session with the company I was working for. And we were all young, athletic people with a lot of energy, and we would have been the last person that probably would have, last people that would have been targeted for any kind of problem. But I remember just always kind of looking over my shoulder, always noticing people around me. I'd carry a camera with me a lot of times to take pictures of the city. And I remember wrapping the strap of my camera around my wrist 2 or 3 times, just thinking someone might come by and grab the camera out of my hand or try to grab my wallet or something. So, but in the meantime, in the 90s, New York really cleaned up its act. I knew even before 9/11 that New York was a lot safer place. But then we tend to focus on problems in the world. We're very good at addressing problems after they happen. So the idea that New York will be the target, or that planes hitting tall buildings will be the target, is probably the most remote scenario of a next situation. Because we cover everything that just happened, and it happens in many walks of life, whether it's a football play, if one team has a good experience with one play, the defense learns how to defend that play. Well, that's probably the least probable play that's going to be run next, but everybody's watching for that play that you just had success with. So after 9/11, actually, it was clear that New York was going to become a safer and safer place because the awareness of New York, both among its people, but also nationally and globally, was that every aspect of security and awareness would be heightened. So actually, you go into New York is probably one of the safer places you could be because the security and the awareness is so high. Now, just clearly by numbers, there are going to be problems in New York, but the probability or the number of people affected, it's so much bigger than many states in the United States, and we all states have events from time to time, whether it's a human caused event or a natural disaster or something. So I know there will be things that concern me in New York while you're in school, but the odds that they're big catastrophic events, I don't think are very great at all.
Have you ever kind of like faced the conflict, I think that like every parent goes through, with like wanting to keep your kids safe, maybe not like go too far, go to school too far away, or something like that, versus wanting them to like follow their dreams and like do what they like, you know, kind of.
Oh, clearly.
How do you feel?
Clearly, the natural instinct of a parent, and probably the natural instinct of a mother cow or a dog or an elephant or anything, is you want to coddle your kids and you want them to be happy and live the perfect life and face no danger. But we also, as parents, if we're really thinking about it, know that you can only become smarter, stronger, more aware by being hardened at a measured pace, not necessarily hardened, but just more worldly, a broader perspective, a greater awareness, a greater sensitivity to the world, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. Parents have to slowly move the hovering, the protection, the safety net away, and I think it's a real gradual process. It probably starts the day you're born, and every day thereafter, parents get a little more comfortable moving a little farther away. And a circle of life, actually, at one point in time, those roles will actually even reverse, and you start, the parent stops protecting the child as much as the child is more responsible for protecting the parent. So at some point, even those roles reverse a little bit. And so that's natural. But I think parents handle it different ways. I think your mother and I have both agreed that you and your brother are very capable, and we want to let you bite off all you can handle. And if you stub your toe along the way, that's okay. Just don't make a really bad mistake that you can't recover from.
I think
we're good.
I think so. Yeah, 24 minutes worth, so, or 20 minutes.
A ramble.
My documentary only has to be 5 minutes long.